Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island, proud supporter of live music and driven to think big about beer since 1988. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago, Illinois. Think big about beer.
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and later in the show, we'll have an interview and a live performance with Margo Price. But first, we have to pay tribute to the late Anthony Bourdain. We are replaying a conversation we aired with Anthony Bourdain in 2008. 8 books total, 4 different hit television shows, an incredible man, dead at the age of 61 on June 8th in France by his own hand. You know, why did we have this chef, this raconteur, this television host on our show? At the risk of getting all sappy, you and me believe that music remains the greatest force in the world to unite people who may have strong differences, people we don't know, people we're afraid of. Bourdain felt that way about food. I am a food fan as well as a music fan. I know so are you. And Bourdain was a music fan as well as a food fan. The way he talked passionately about food is the way we try to talk about music, and we talked about music with him. We began our conversation by asking Anthony Bourdain to explain the similarities between the rock and roll lifestyle and that of a chef.
There's a lot of overlap, I think, in you know, the talent pool. You know, the kitchen has always been sort of a refuge for misfits, marginal characters who kind of instinctively understand that the 9-to-5 world is not for them. I think what's been missed as well is that our hours coincide. I mean, certainly when I came up in the business in the early and mid-70s, you know, musicians like to hang out in bars. We have a bar in our restaurant. You know, musicians get off work 2 in the morning. We get off 2 in the morning. So it wasn't really a stretch. You know, musicians like free food. We like, you know, to get into concerts for free. So there was a lot of overlap there.
What about that interest in music? I mean, what came first for you? You obviously were a very accomplished chef early on, but that scene back then, you were intimately involved and it seemed like you were going beyond the surface level music. So obviously you'd been into music for a while as well.
Well, my father worked for Columbia Records when I was a kid. And, you know, so I was on sample service early on. You know, my dad would come home, though he worked in the Columbia Masterwork Division, classical music division. He'd come home, you know, when I was a little kid with, you know, here, Tony, this is, you know, Sgt. Pepper's. Everybody at the office in the A&R department says, you know, this is the greatest record ever. You should listen to it, you know. I had to remind him of this years later as, don't blame me for the drugs, Dad. You gave me that album, you know. So that was, you know, I grew up in a musical family where music was important and it was something we noticed and where I tended to be aware of the best albums, the best records of the time, as, you know, often before they were released.
Mm-hmm. So after getting off work in the kitchen, you'd be hanging in the early 70s with the Ramones, with, you know, the members of the New York punk scene, the Dead Boys.
I'd see the Dead Boys around. I mean, I was a big Richard Hell and the Voidoids fan. You know, I got the vapors when Richard Hell would come in, you know, for a glass of bourbon and his scrambled eggs in the morning. You know, that was a big deal to me.
Yeah.
Late last night.
And what was special about that, I guess, is that no one else knew who they were. I mean, the punk thing was, this was music you never heard on the radio and was not referred to in any magazine and was basically invisible and inaudible to everyone everywhere for the most part for quite some time. So it was special, you know.
You know, you mentioned the bourbon and the eggs in the morning. What would these guys eat? I mean, what, you know, were they as interested in food as you were in music?
I think they were just starving. I mean, they didn't eat enough. You know, a lot of that money went to dope. Food was sort of a secondary consideration. I mean, if you look at how a lot of those guys were living, it was pretty close to the margins. And, of course, they're not making any money. You know, maybe their girlfriends are making money, you know, stripping or dancing or whatever, which was a popular way to make a living at the time.
So would you slide them a meal occasionally?
Yeah, I was a big Johnny Thunders fan, and we managed to network a free meal for him. You know, we had him come in and eat at the restaurant. He came in all dressed up. You know, little tie, little tuxedo jacket, and terrified. That's the thing that struck me. He was really intimidated. He'd never eaten in a fine dining situation before. And I remember when he was offered, like, would you like, you know, red or white? You know, he just had them both mixed in a glass. And, you know, it was like a little kid. And it was very, you know, sweet.
Yeah, that's cool.
You make the point philosophically that the music can affect what's going on in your kitchen. You have played punk rock at different times, but now there are different soundtracks. Could you talk a little bit about how the stuff that none of us hear or see, because we know we're sitting out at the table, right? What's going on in the kitchens where you have worked and like to work, and what's the soundtrack?
Well, a lot of chefs now, it's, you know, total silence during the service period. You know, there's going to be no music at all. But, you know, a mid-range joint like mine, chances are, you know, when I was working in the kitchen every day, during prep, I liked soundtrack to Superfly, Curtis Mayfield, early sort of pre-disco funk, maybe a little George Clinton, you know, that kind of sound.
Establishing a groove.
Establishing a groove. During the service period, you know, you're kind of fighting for music, for DJ position, or at least you're trying to accommodate a lot of different tastes. You know, maybe a little punk, you know, Dead Boys early on. But then I got to kind of swap for some, you know, Mexican thrash metal or Mexican pop songs and stuff like that, with the majority of my kitchen are, of course, Mexican. You know, when I'm getting out of the kitchen, then you get into, you know, more adrenaline-based stuff, I guess. You know, then it's definitely Ramones all the way.
Because you got to get through to the end of the night.
Or, you know, classic stuff. Give you that one more shot of adrenaline to propel you out into the night.
The day's just beginning.
Beat on the brat, beat on the brat, beat on the brat with the baseball bat. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, ho.
But do you think that what the cooks are listening to can be tasted in the end result? I mean, that's a philosophical heavy
question. I know some chefs who definitely, on the more creative end, who get flavors from sound. You know, they actually get inspired creatively by listening to music. I'm not like that. I was always, first of all, I wasn't that creative a chef. I was more of a workhorse journeyman guy. But most chefs, I think, use music for release. You know, afterwards, it could kind of, you're looking for a pleasurable oblivion, or to take you out and away from the kind of coal mine situation you've been in. So I don't know what that's like. You know, I'm not inspired to cook by music. I like to cook to music. If I'm alone in my kitchen, you know, just cooking for a few friends, that's different. Then that's a whole different kind of groove. I could be going, you know, old, anywhere from Dean Martin. You know, I like old, like, cheesy British gangster film soundtracks. Like, I'm very into the Get Carter soundtrack now in a big way.
Well, that's an interesting area, because I wanted to ask you this, and I think it's one of the key questions in my life. Like, what do you play when you have people over for dinner? It's like, okay, what complements this meal? And so you have six guests over, and you're cooking dinner for them. What do you put on? Does it depend on what you're serving? Does it depend who they are?
Definitely, I think Serge Gainsbourg is good for French. You know, maybe Serge Gainsbourg with Brigitte Bardot, that wonderful single.
Yeah.
Elle est belle et son prénom c'est Bonnie. À eux deux, ils forment le gang Barrow.
You know, something that's evocative of France, if that's what you're doing with the food. And Italy, you know, definitely you're falling into that kind of, you know, Connie Francis, you know, you're talking Dean Martin.
So you're going to go old school, or you're going to stick with, like, the
old school
pizza joint kind of
soundtrack?
I don't
want to hear Portishead, and, you know, I don't want dining lounge music in the background. You know, that's so ubiquitous. Yeah. I'm not serving chocolate martinis. Why should I play chocolate martini music, you know?
So it's not sort of an ambient thing. It's like you don't want this sort of sifting in the background where people can sort of talk over it.
You see, I've always gone that direction.
Yeah.
Because Eric Satie said that ambient music is music that mingles with the knives and forks at dinner. So I can't play Satie. That's too whip. But I opt out with Eno. Because, you know, you know, my in-laws won't object to Eno. Somebody hipper knows that it's Eno.
You know, I'll put on the, you know, for the hipper crowd, I'll put on McCoy Tyner. for like the little less hip crowd, George Winston, you know, kind of solo piano. Mm-hmm. You don't want anything too interfering with, you know, you don't want anybody to, you know, harsh their mellow, whatever it is.
So,
while they're
so
eating,
metal
know?
Machine music would be out,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I mean, you know.
It's probably music that could interfere with digestion physically.
And friendships.
Yeah,
that's
right.
I'm asking. And the same thing for setting the mood in a restaurant. I'd love to hear the amazing soundtrack that's going on while you're cooking in the back. But what about the folks out front eating? What do you set for them musically?
Innocuous, you know. It's if in my restaurant, it's like Edith Piaf and, you know, French chanteurs and, you know, stuff like that. I do like, you know, kind of early 60s French pop sometimes. But really innocuous, so you don't want to distract from the meal. I mean, that's true at home as well. You don't want people to stop the conversation dead to admire what a, you know, forward thinking genius you were when you bought the album. You know, that's just, it's like people who used to, you know, stand up and show you that they could recite every line from a Fireside Theater or a Frank Zappa album. You know, right. There's something a little creepy about that.
It's too
know?
Much.
It's yeah,
too
it's
much.
Too much.
You're not a purist. That's what I like about your sensibility. It's like you're just as comfortable eating a bad hot dog in a cool bar on the Lower East Side as you are in a 4-star French restaurant.
Often more so.
And I was going to say, is that, you know, I mean, you've traveled in these worlds where you're around a lot of chefs. I mean, do most chefs share that sort of sensibility where they can appreciate food at those kind of levels, or are they snobs?
I think most chefs after work want a good hot dog or something good, local, authentic, and totally without pretense. And, of course, just like there are musicians, you know, people that you know, after a musician performs, they want to go see. There are chefs who tend to simplify things and, you know, cook pretty straightforward stuff.
Mm-hmm. I got to ask you about, okay, two artists that you have said you will never countenance anywhere, anytime, in any restaurant
not
that
you
in ever
my kitchen.
Step foot in. No Billy Joel, no Grateful Dead.
Yeah.
I am the entertainer, and I know just where I stand. Another serenader and another long-haired band.
Well, Billy Joel is actually, you know, I've said no Billy Joel is allowed in my kitchen. You know, under you're fired if you've seen visibly enjoying Billy Joel. He has slipped into my kitchen on numerous occasions and sent me pictures of himself
with
signs saying, I guess you do let Billy Joel in your kitchen. I've had dinner with him. And as I said to him, I just hate your music, man. I believe you're really talented. I mean, it's clearly you are. I just really hate that melodic kind of stuff.
And he hasn't taken a swing at you?
No, he was very cool.
Because
he's a good eater.
We've both gotten the nasty phone calls from Joel when we dared to review him.
He's a competitive guy.
He was a very, very good guy with a good sense of humor to me. You know, I've been making Billy Joel jokes for a long time.
I just,
you know, so he's allowed in my kitchen anytime, just not his music.
Yeah.
The Grateful Dead, I just don't, you know, hippies. You know, anyone who likes the Grateful Dead, I have concerns about their arrival time and work ethic. You know, to start with. And I had a bitter experiences in the 60s and 70s. You know, it all sort of died and was over by the time. It was everything that I hated when the Ramones arrived and saved me. You know, endless pedal steel solos and noodling away on guitars. And, you know, the words, oh, the show was great, it went on for 7 hours. That never sounded good to me.
Yeah.
So,
No,
don't like it.
Well, I think you have an opposition, too, to the extended meal, too. It seemed like there's a little bit of opposition on your part. Like, why does this have to be a 4-hour extravaganza where you get the escort to the men's room when you want to go there?
It's I would be, you know, a perfect world, I would be eating the world's stuff from great chefs, the best ingredients. I'd be eating with my hands, and I would not have to wear shoes.
You know? Street food, big fan of street food.
Right.
What about this notion, Tony, that chefs are the new rock stars? Now, you are infamous, as we are. You know, we're critics. We put ourselves on the line. You know, when we you just went off on the Grateful Dead. You know, but you don't do that for a living. You're just a guy who has an opinion on the Grateful Dead. We can say in the paper, and we're going to get 300 emails the next day. But you take on some of the other names, some people who do TV shows but apparently never cook. You know, and you give props to guys who may be stars now, but, you know, worked in the kitchen the hard way.
You know, it was fun making fun of Emeril for a while. But, you know, that's a hardworking guy who came up, you know, the hard way and deserves some success with, you know, and at least as a professional, which is probably why they're giving him the chop over at Food Network. We're going through a transitional phase here where it's really not about the food. It's not about the cooking. It's about the personalities. And I guess in a lot of the same way that MTV made a transition to, you know, I mean, how much music is on MTV anymore?
None anymore.
None. So how much food is actually going to be on Food Network? I think, you know, about the same.
Do you find that there's a correlation between great music towns, cities around the world, and great food? I mean, can a town have amazing restaurants and great food with lousy music, or vice versa?
You know, that's a really good question. You know, I'm thinking about great music towns. I think, you know, people who like music tend to be sensualists. People who like food tend to be sensualists. You're open to music. You're open to food. And I think those attitudes tend to coincide more often than not.
Well, our favorite rock star chef, by all means, is Tony Bourdain. Thank you very much, Tony.
My pleasure.
That was our conversation with the late Anthony Bourdain, dead at age 61. Please call and leave your memories of Bourdain at 888-859-1800. Coming up, a conversation and performance from Margo Price in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.